Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are now listening to the Sitting in the Park show. Today we're going to be starting off the show with an interview with members of the Chicago group, The 8 Minutes. So first of all, are you guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, great. So so The 8 Minutes, you guys were a kiddie group, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so, first of all, can you introduce yourselves? Who are the listeners listening to right now?
Well, I'm Ricky. I'm was one of the youngest of the group. I was the drummer.
Okay.
And I was the guitar player.
Okay, and your last name is Goggins, is that right?
Yeah.
And you guys, you cut a whole bunch of records, and you even cut a whole album. So during the interview, we'll be talking about your music and the history of it. So one thing that's interesting is you guys are the first sort of kiddie group that I've been interviewing on this show. And you came out around the same time, like probably right before even the Jackson 5 were coming out. Is that right?
Right. That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
So first of all, let's start out with what part of Chicago are you guys from?
We're from Maple Park. That's right next to Morgan Park.
Okay.
15th area.
So, and you guys, the whole group, almost everybody was from about the same streets, is that right?
Yeah.
So what blocks were you guys from?
We was on Carpenter Street. We was in the 115th block, and the other half of the group was from the 116th block of Carpenter.
Okay. And the group consisted of, like, two sets of families and a couple other people, is that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So you guys were all the part of the Goggins family, is that right?
Yeah, it was. Yeah. I'm the youngest, the drummer, and then I had my other brother was the bass guitarist, and then David here, he played lead, and the other family in the 1600 block, one played the guitar, and the other two were singers.
So what's the name of your other brother that's not on the phone?
His name's Ronald.
Ronald, okay.
Yeah, he's our bass guitarist. He wasn't able to make it tonight.
So, when what years did you guys form?
It's been a long time ago.
Yeah.
But you formed in...
I got to say, at least in the late, 69 to 70?
Yeah,
something
right. Something like that. Yeah.
So when you formed, did you form as a band, as a singing group? How did it start?
Well, at first it was just me and my two brothers. We'd practice in the basement on plastic guitars and little cheap drum sets and stuff. And then somebody in the neighborhood said, hey, they got some other people down the street can sing real good.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Kind of hooked up like that. And
yeah.
Started trying to, you know, do little dances and different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you guys get into music originally? Like, you were pretty young. Like, Ricky, you were the youngest one, is that right?
Yeah.
How young were you when you started playing music?
I got to say I was at least 9-10 years old when I really knew I could play drums, you know.
So how did you just start playing drums? Like, you didn't just buy a drum set, right? Like, were you banging on things?
We had pots and pans and oatmeal box lids and different stuff, and I kept beating and it started sounding good. I'd beat on a bucket or anything that make noise.
So, yeah, and then after we got that, we got some guitars, plastic guitars, and made a makeshift amp. With a microphone and with a C-clamp.
Made
it to electric.
So how did you guys get the idea of starting a band? Like, were you trying to copy, like, the Jackson 5 or other groups? Like, what were you trying to do?
Well, in the winter times in Chicago, you know, it wasn't much to do outside. I mean, with the snow and all, I mean, you can only ice skate so much and play on a sled, but... we had a lot of spare time, and then we had a basement that, you know, we had a lot of room. But
yeah, we had a lot of
practice
room.
And stay out of trouble.
So, but
that happened, and we all could, you know, because at first I wanted to be a guitar player, but, you know, by me being the youngest.
Yeah, we had to make a choice. Who's going to be the bass player? Who's going to be the guitar player? Who's going to be the drummer?
So then...
That was just us, you know. And then after that, then we found a... other people down the street.
Yeah.
So then you
helped out a little because they could sing.
So you started the band just kind of, you were bored, right? You said you had nothing to do, so you started the band?
Yeah, we had other things to do. I mean, we had a full-size pool table. We got bored with that and ping pong and,
stuff. So we played baseball and everything.
Was there specific types of music that you were listening to that you wanted to play like?
We started off playing rock and roll.
Okay.
Yeah. Just with the three of us, that's what our preference was, like Buddy Miles and different stuff
like that.
Simple music that wasn't hard to play.
And then after that, after we made a few records, then after that we had to change up and play what they wanted us to.
Well, yeah, we keep up with the pop charts.
Yeah.
So you started out as like a band in your basement, just three brothers playing.
Yeah.
And then you heard that down the street from you, like a block away, was another family who could sing. So what was the name? What was the names of the other families? What was their last name?
Well, the youngest guy, he was about my age. Me and him was about a couple of months apart in age.
Okay.
His name was Wendell Sutter, and then he had his middle brother. His name is also David Sutter. He was a rhythm guitar player.
Okay.
And the older sister name was Heather Sutter.
Okay.
And we got together, and then we added a few more members, you know, a keyboard player, congo player, and then we started sounding pretty good, and stuff started happening.
So you ended up forming like a tighter group when you came with the Goggins family, met the Sutter family, and you started playing together.
And
you actually ended up cutting your first record under the name The Soul Impact.
Impact, right.
So actually,
what song you talking about?
Their first song was called Here's Some Dances.
Yes.
So let me play the record so the audience knows what we're talking about, and then we'll come back and talk some more. Is that okay?
All right, yeah, we'll hang on.
Okay, so this is you guys' first record. This is The Soul Impacts with Here's Some Dances.
All right.
Okay, that was just The Soul Impacts with their very first record called Here's Some Dances. And if you're just tuning in, I have on the phone right now Ricky and David Goggins of The Soul Impacts, who later became The 8 Minutes. So you guys can hear me now, right?
Yeah, we got you.
Okay, cool. So that was a very kind of raw sounding recording. Like you could tell you guys had. Do you know how long you'd been playing together before that record came out?
It's really hard to tell. I mean, because since I was 8, 9 years old, I played with my brothers. And a lot of times we went in the studio, I wouldn't even know we were recording. So, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that record came, but do you think you were probably together for a couple years before that came out, a year? Okay.
Yeah, I'll give it a couple of years.
Okay. And how long had you been playing with, so you were together with the Suddeths for about a year or two, is that right?
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, yeah.
So
then we changed.
Yeah, so before that record came out, what were you doing? Were you playing, like, local dances or talent shows?
Yeah, black clubs, house parties.
Black parties, yeah.
Yeah, stuff
we
like
did
that.
A couple coffee bars, you call them.
Yeah.
Okay.
Stuff like that.
And what kind of music did you play at those things?
Schools, huh?
Well, we changed. We had to play where we had to record.
Okay, well, before you recorded, what type of music were you playing?
I'd say anything like rhythm and blues, or, Marvin Gaye, anything like that.
Okay.
We could play anything. It was just a matter of what crowd we were performing for, you know.
That's right.
So then,
we preferred, rhythm and blues.
Mm-hmm.
So do you remember the story of how you ended up getting actually a record put out, like the label that came out on was a label called SIM, and I think you were telling me someone named Doris Jones put it out.
Right.
Do you remember the story about how you got hooked up with her or how the record came out?
Yeah, kind of sort of bits and pieces,
Yeah,
we were playing for one lady.
I worked at a school, and we used to practice in the summertime when the school was out. We used to go in the auditorium. And then somebody must have saw it, and it went on from there.
Okay, so do you remember meeting the Doris Jones lady that ran the label?
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Well, she came to the house, so she was in a business suit and stuff. And I was young and kind of rebellious against school teachers at the time, so that's what she reminded me of.
Okay.
But, I had respect for the lady, and I see what she was trying to do is record music for the little kids,
Mm-hmm. We did some other songs.
Simple
with her.
Exercise music for little kids.
We went on one of these stations, the public stations.
WPTW.
Yeah.
Okay.
The broadcasting channel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's Channel 11 in Chicago.
That was our first one, yes.
So you performed on a TV show when that Here's Some Dances song came out?
Yeah.
So do you remember?
I'm not mistaken. It could, because we was under a lot of lights and cameras and action, what I'm saying?
You don't remember what the TV show was?
No, they just tell me, play that song again, and I play it,
We just play.
So was it a kiddie show, the TV show? Well, was it targeted towards
kids? Kind of. That's what they wanted to make it. Like, we're going to play, like, child stuff.
Okay.
Then I think that's when somebody else saw us and saw something else different from that, and then we changed.
More like a fifth dimension kind of thing.
Okay, so Doris Jones, her original goal was to make you like a group targeted towards kids.
Yeah.
And so originally you were playing like kiddie type songs.
Yeah, right.
So and I know on the record did you guys write the song or did she write the song? You don't know.
She just gave us the lyrics. We make up the melody to it. Yeah.
Okay.
All that we had to do.
But as far as the lyrics, she already had her lyrics with her.
Yeah, and the song is just about like some dances of the day, right?
Right. Back then, yeah.
And later you re-recorded it. As the 8 minutes, it was the B-side to one of your records.
Yeah.
So what's the story? I think you were starting to talk about how at one of the shows you were doing, you were discovered by someone else, which I guess led to your getting additional members and becoming the 8 minutes.
Right.
Do you remember the story behind that at all?
Well, Doris Jones and I think it was James Porter.
Okay.
He seen where he could take it further and put violins in the back for us and kind of spiff it up and make it more like Will You Still Be Mine was like on graduation day. So we jumped from the kitty stuff to graduating out of high school.
Okay, I'll play that record next.
And try to appeal to the crowd with that.
Yeah, Jim Porter, he had another kiddie group out too called Cindy and the Playmates. You don't remember anything about them, do you?
I've heard of them, okay. But I couldn't say I know.
Because he also had them do a kind of, he had them do a song called What Are We Gonna Do Now That School Is Through, so.
Yeah, it was similar to Will You Still Be Mine.
So Jim Porter just kind of saw you at one of the shows you were doing. You think something like that happened, probably?
Yeah, I think we got too big for Doris Jones, and she had to turn us over to somebody more experienced. Yeah.
Yeah, you can tell your later recordings are done much more professionally.
Yeah,
like in a better
violins and different stuff.
Do you remember going to the studio and recording to hear some dances?
Because
it almost sounds like it was recorded in a basement or something. Cause it's just,
it might have been.
Okay.
Maybe. You know how long that's been.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's been 30.
And then the equipment back then in them days wasn't what it is today.
Oh, yeah, some dances.
But then the...
I remember that song. I know the song.
So
yeah, we
recorded it, and what you have, I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know.
So Jim Porter then discovered you, and then what's the story? He changed your name and added a couple members. Is that right?
Yes.
So
yeah, added
one.
He added one member, but then it's only seven. Who's the member he added?
Carl Montgomery.
Okay.
And
Carl Monroe.
Monroe, I think it is. Yeah, Carl Monroe and Joanna Glover.
Okay, so were they from your neighborhood too?
Yeah, the Joanna lived right next door to the Sutters down the street. So
okay,
he was in the hood, and they call him Mongeal, but his name is Carl.
Okay,
I don't know where he come from, but he was a good congo player. He helped me out with the percussions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's cool. You were almost all from the same block or two, pretty much.
Yeah.
So how did they were just on your block, and he just wanted to make the group bigger, so did he find them, or you found them, or what happened?
Well, he did all that arrangement, you know. He introduced us to the new members, and he took them in, auditioned them, and make sure they would fit in to what we were trying to do, or what he was trying to do.
Yeah, what he was trying to do.
It worked out, you know.
They
got a pretty full sound.
Yeah.
Compared to what they have out nowadays.
So then, you changed your name once you had eight people to the 8 minutes. Did he come up with that name, Jim Porter?
It was a mutual decision.
Okay. And then who came...
We all had to decide on what we was going to be calling ourselves.
Who came up with your original name, The Soul Impacts?
I would have to say, I don't know.
Okay.
My older brothers, probably.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I'm going to play the song you were just talking about called Will You Still Be Mine? And you were just talking about it's about Will You Still Be Mine After Graduation. So I'm going to play it, and then we'll talk some more. So this is the 8 minutes with Will You Still Be Mine?
But soon you graduate and have me.
Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. If you're just tuning in, I have on the phone two members of the group The 8 Minutes. I have on the phone Ricky Goggins and David Goggins. So you guys can hear me, right?
Yes, sir. We still here.
So the record I just played, I think it was the second record that got released by you as The 8 Minutes. It was called Will You Still Be Mine?
Mm-hmm.
The first record that got released by The 8 Minutes, I think, was Take My Love, Don't Set Me Free.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and then we had Oh Yes I Do.
Yeah. I'll play that one next.
Yeah.
So first of all, you had just kind of gotten signed by Jim Porter, and he put out a few records locally on you on a label that he ran called JP.
JP Productions.
Yeah, I remember JP.
So first of all, were you all still in high school at the time? About how old were you when this stuff was coming out?
I gotta say, I was probably about in the 8th grade or so.
Okay.
Like that.
I was probably about
years in high school.
Yeah, I was in high school.
So what high school did you guys go to?
I went to Finger High School.
Okay.
I did too.
And do you remember any other groups from Finger? Because I've talked to one guy who was in a group called the Mystiques, and they were a Finger group, but I don't know if you remember them or any other Finger groups.
I don't remember them.
Okay, but you were pretty much one of the only groups in your high school at the time. Then is that right?
It gotta be, or either we were just kind of shut off from other things, you know.
Yeah, okay. we never played in Finger High School.
Okay, So that record came out, and you were still in school. You must have—I mean, your first record came out while you were still in school too. It must have been pretty exciting to have
a
record out.
It was kind of hard to hear your record, and then you get to school, and your classmates kind of say, "Hey, man, you're a celebrity, you know, and this and that." But it was all right, you know. I don't think I got the big head. I don't think.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, but I was still a little bad boy in Chicago back in the day.
So the records. I know that the Soul Impacts record was very obscure. Probably didn't get much play. Did the 8 Minutes records get play on the radio when they came out?
Yeah, I remember hearing our records. So
on WVON.
Okay.
The first one, Will You Still Be Mine? Was number. Yeah. Nine.
Something up in there.
And then Oh Yes I Do was, I think it got to be like number 3. We was in competition with the Jacksons.
Okay.
So we couldn't play in the same town, but we used to go to Indiana and play when we was with the 8 Minutes. But we couldn't play in the same town that they played, and he didn't want to. To listen to
No, we wasn't able to. We didn't want us to be influenced by anybody.
No,
which is good, you know.
Well, you had
a lot of copycat groups out there. After a while,
you had a different sound. Like you had a very Chicago kind of sound on a lot of your stuff. Like Oh Yes I Do sounds very Chicago.
Yeah.
From the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you were in high school. Were you were playing and performing at that time?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what happened? Did you go to school and then on the weekends or something you went and performed? What was happening?
Yeah, or either during the week after school. Most of our engagement would be after, you know, school hours or whatever. It'd be kind of tough getting up going to school, but it was another way of us staying out of, you know, other trouble.
Okay. So what types of places did you play? Like did you play clubs in Chicago?
Yeah, we played in a few places where, you know, I was really underage and I shouldn't have been in there.
Guys and the gals.
Yeah, and some places they would turn my drums backwards to
play. And then we always was escorted.
Yeah, my parents always was with us.
Did you say they turn your drums backwards? What do you mean?
They was, you know, they might have us spinning for a
legal
sheet dancer or something, you know, and they need a drummer right then and there, and they turn my drums backwards so I couldn't see what they was doing. Yeah.
So, did you ever? And you said you played outside of Chicago too. You played in Indiana, is that right?
Yeah, in high school, close where the Jacksons come up from, in Roosevelt High, I think, in Gary, Indiana.
Okay, so, did your parents take you? Did you have a bus? Like, how did you go touring with all your band and equipment and stuff?
My daddy always had big cars.
Big car or something like that.
Right. We used to load it all up in a trunk.
And then when we got to a certain age, my oldest brother was able to drive. He had his license.
Mm-hmm.
That would help out on. But our equipment back then, I mean, it wasn't no real big stuff.
No.
Like
sometimes we depend on what they got in the.
We'd use the house PA or something
like that.
Okay.
Who was singing?
Well, let me play another record by you, and then we could talk some more. This is the one we were just talking about. This track is called Oh Yes I Do, and then after that we'll come back and talk some more. So, again, this is the 8 minutes with Oh Yes I Do. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. You are listening to the Sitting in the Park show. If you're just tuning in right now, I'm doing an interview with the Chicago group, The 8 Minutes. So right now I have on the phone Ricky and David Goggins. You guys can hear me, right?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay. So that was just like your third or fourth record released as The 8 Minutes. On the JP label that was called Oh Yes I Do. So one thing I didn't ask about, so that record you were talking about before got some radio play in Chicago too, right?
Yeah, well, I remember.
And it had
I've been hearing that.
And that song has a nice kind of Chicago type of sound too. And then
a lot of time on that one.
Okay, and do you remember recording the stuff in the studio?
Kind of, sort of. Because back in the day when we have to record, we usually be in practice so much.
Okay.
By the time we go in there, we only have to play it maybe a
couple of times, and that was a take. That was it.
And so you guys, did you always practice in your basement pretty much?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, so, that's about the best place where we didn't have to rent a space or nothing like that.
Okay.
We were close to home. You know, we'd come right upstairs and do our homework, go to bed, whatever we had to do.
Okay, so was it always in your basement, or was it also in the Suddis' basement?
Both of them.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'd switch up sometimes.
Yeah, when somebody get tired.
Put our equipment in a wagon and push it to their house for a few days. You know, like Spanky and the gang, you know.
So and were your parents supportive of what was going on?
Oh, yeah, as long as we wasn't in, you know, out getting in any trouble. That was the main thing back then.
Okay.
Easy to find.
Yeah, in Chicago.
So one thing I didn't ask yet was, I know you guys were a band and you talked about who played what instruments. Did everybody sing too, or only certain people sang?
Well, when we first started out, we would try singing, but, you know, we would more concentrate on the music part and leave the singing to the singers.
Okay.
Yeah.
If it was a spot where, you know, they needed a lot of voices, yeah, we would help out.
So you sang backup on some stuff?
Yeah, kind of sort. I don't have the greatest singing voice.
I ain't gonna say that.
Don't ask me to sing none of our songs.
Well, I won't ask anyone to sing now, especially. But so who sang lead on most of the records?
Wendell.
Yeah, I would say Wendell.
Wendell and Heather.
And Heather, his oldest sister.
Okay, and what did you Juana sing?
Yes.
Okay.
Background. Mm-hmm. Like.
Okay, but
she sang a lead though.
Yeah.
Do you know what song she sang, Leo?
Love, Don't Set Me Free.
Take My Love, Don't Set Me
Free. Okay. But lead on most of the records, like you said, was Wendell and Hedda.
Yeah.
Okay. So one thing that's interesting is Jim Porter released a bunch of records on you, and then he actually got your music picked up by a major label called Perception, which I think was based in New York.
Perception? Today Records?
Yeah, Today Perception is the same label.
Yeah.
So they recorded a whole album on you, and they put out actually two singles on you on Perception Records.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember the details of anything about how you ended up getting signed to a bigger label or anything about?
It was really in the fog for me back then.
Yeah.
I didn't know Doris Jones from James Porter from Perception Today.
So stuff was just sort of going on and you were sort of going along with it?
Yeah.
I was. Yeah, we were young.
Okay.
I mean, it was something new. It wasn't nothing too much out of the way. It was just something we were doing anyway.
Yeah, when somebody say to you, manager, I mean, you tend to leave a lot of stuff up to them.
Yeah, I had working parents and they didn't have time, you know.
Yeah.
So was Jim Porter your manager at the time?
Yeah.
Okay. And then they released a couple singles on you on Perception. One of them was called Next Time He'll Be Good and I Can't Wait. And then the other one was called Looking for a Brand New Game and Find the One Who Loves You. So I don't know if you remember either of those singles coming out.
I remember them, but would
you hear them?
Yeah,
I remember them.
What category? With order they fall in? Is we got?
Yeah, I think the order I told you was the order that they came out.
Yeah.
I think they all came out around 1972.
Mm-hmm.
So
and then they would play a whole album instead of just one song off of it, you know?
Okay. So were you all still in high school when the records came out at that time? Were some of you graduated by then?
Yeah, I was in grammar school most of the time I was in the band.
Okay.
Yeah. Me, I was still in high school. I graduated in 69.
Okay. Well, those records were coming out in like 72, so it must have been a little after you graduated then.
Yeah, I had graduated.
I wasn't even in high school yet.
Okay, so the older ones were, some of the older ones might have been graduated, and then the younger ones were still even in grammar school, possibly.
Yeah, yeah. We had a big range of age.
Okay, and then when you graduated from school, did you think you were going to focus full-time on music, or you were working and doing music on the side?
Well, we still can play. I mean, we just had the opportunity hadn't presented itself.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's a good thing in playing, but you also got to earn a living, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
and
let me
tell you, don't put nothing in your belly.
Start getting a family, you got to support
yeah.
different stuff, you know. You kind
of when
put
we
the
changed
music on
from,
a back burner, you know.
When we came, when he went to New York and came back with the Perception thing, they said we were supposed to make so many albums or whatever, and
yeah,
so many.
Put us on ice.
And they put us on hold and
tied up in a contract where we couldn't do nothing.
Right.
Well, let me play one of the songs.
No records, we couldn't play nowhere, so everything fell apart.
Well, let me play one of the songs that we can talk about that. So this song I'm going to play is called Next Time He'll Be Good.
Yeah,
and then we'll talk a little bit more about what happened with the Perception stuff.
Yeah, that album almost can be your theme song. I'm sitting in the park.
So this is the 8 minutes with Next Time He'll Be Good. Okay, you're tuned to WHPK 88.5 FM in Chicago. If you're just tuning in, you are listening to the Sitting in the Park show, and we are in the middle of an interview with two members of the 8 Minutes. That was a track called Next Time He'll Be Good, and it's one of the first records that was released on the major label. You guys got signed to Perception. And if you're just tuning in, Ricky and David Goggins are on the phone talking about the history of their group. So that was, I think, the first single that got released on Perception, and there was a second single. So before we played the record, we were talking about how Jim Porter like went took your stuff to New York and got it signed to that major label. Is that right?
Yeah.
Perception, and then on the album they released some of your older songs and they released some new songs, and you even did a couple of songs that were covers of Black Ivory, who were another group that were on the label that you were on.
Mm-hmm.
So like the songs that you covered by the Black Ivory were "Find the One Who Loves You,"
yes,
and "Loneliest Girl in Town." So and those songs.
Loneliest Girl in Town.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think when they made that, it was called it the Loneliest Boy in Town.
Yeah.
I think when they sent it to us, they made Heather sing that to make it the Loneliest Girl.
Yeah, yeah. The original version is the Loneliest Boy in Town because it was originally sung by a male group, Black Ivory, and then I guess they had to switch it to girl because there was a woman singing in your group.
Right.
Yes.
So do you remember how that happened? Like you didn't, because a guy in New York named Patrick Adams did a lot of production on that stuff. You didn't interact with him at all, right? They just sent you the tapes.
No. Never left the city of Chicago.
No.
So what happened? They just sent you the music and you sang over it.
Yeah, we have to learn it. Sent the sheet music. We have to learn it and you know when we go out to perform it, we would play it our way.
Okay. So yeah, and it must have sounded much different when you were performing it than when it was all orchestrated.
Right. You're right.
To our standards.
That's why we had too many members to fill in. Everybody would do something, play a tambourine, add to it some kind of way if they wasn't singing. Yeah.
So, but you must have been pretty excited to have an album out still when that came out.
Oh, yeah. Should I go to the local store? They had the record shop right there next door to the local store with our album cover in the front window. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, and your guys' photos are on the album cover too, right? All eight of you are on the. So actually, do you remember what the cover looks like? Which ones are you in the photo? Because I'm holding it in front of me, and there's a triangle.
The one in the orange shirt.
So you're the smallest one.
Yeah.
And then
I'm the one with the fro, very top.
Okay.
The big afro.
Well, at
the very top is our other brother. He ain't here right now.
Yeah.
Okay.
Ronald, he was the bass player.
He's at the very top.
I can tell your brothers now that I'm looking at the photo.
Yeah.
So what happened? The record came out, and then did it get any play or promotion? Do you know?
We had kind of split apart after that, and I don't know, I had got rumor that they were playing it in New York. So
okay.
It
went fell apart after that. Everybody, we couldn't wait. They sat on us.
Okay.
Yeah. For a long time.
People got
married and went to the military. Yeah. And
okay, so people kind of left to go on with their lives pretty much.
Yeah.
Yes.
James Porter, I ain't gonna bash him over the radio, but
you
got a manager and you leave a lot of things into their hands.
Yeah,
a lot of them going
plus you're young and naive, you don't really.
Yeah, that's a story of a lot of people I talked to. Like they didn't when they first got into music, they were just excited and didn't know what was going on, and they got ripped off by different people at the time.
Oh yeah.
I ain't got no regrets, no.
Well, they say it's only 1 out of 1,000 that makes it. That was back in the day, so I don't know what the odds are.
Well, I got something to show for it, at least.
Yeah, like at least you produced
it. At least I did something.
And you have a whole album with your photo on it.
Yeah.
Right. It'd be better if I had the song.
A lot of memories, too, though. You know, it's hard to actually tell people, when I was coming up, I was like Michael Jackson,
can't say that.
Sheltered from playing baseball and different stuff.
That's right.
When other kids was out playing, we were in the basement, playing music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, there were
That wasn't
in Chicago. It wasn't no force.
We preferred to do that.
Either go out and play football or baseball.
Well, it really started off with Hank with the electronics, with the guitars and stuff, because he was pretty smart in school, and he got us some little plastic guitars and then got a little plastic microphone thing and hooked it up and amplified it, that was our first amplified guitar, and then when they actually got the real deal, it was pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to play one more song, and then we can talk a little bit more. So the song I'm going to play, this is like a funky type record you did, kind of like a political, almost Temptations type song, called Time for a Change.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the song they need for right now.
Yeah, like especially you were talking about stuff like Vietnam and stuff in the song. It probably applies now too, right?
Oh, yeah.
So this is the song I'm going to play. Again, this is 8 minutes with Time for a Change, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more. Okay, that was just the 8 minutes with a funky kind of political song that they did called Time for a Change. And if you're just tuning in, we are doing an interview with two members of the 8 minutes, Ricky and David Goggins. So we were just talking about how you guys were on Perception Records in New York, and you eventually sort of disbanded, just like people kind of went on to kind of do their own things or start a family.
Yeah.
And you said something earlier about how they had you under contract and you couldn't get out of it or something. Is that?
Well, yeah. Once our little time was up, well, our time wasn't up, but it was under contract and certain, you know, things on the contract. We couldn't go play without the other members of the band. We was also in the musician union.
No.
And there's a lot of places and things we couldn't do, you know.
Okay. So
that kept us tied up. I guess some of us lost interest. And
yeah, that's a story with a lot of groups. Like they kind of stay together for a while, and then you know they get ripped off, or they're not successful, and then they kind of are forced to give up and start a family or get on with their lives.
Well, yeah, that's true.
So, mm-hmm. So
just about how it went.
Yes,
so what?
But I mean, afterwards, I mean, I continued playing drums here and there. You know, after I got older, after I joined church, and I was a church drummer. Me and my other brother. He had another band that he was practicing with while he was in high school, 4M company. It was mostly like a brass band, like the Chicago Band or
okay.
Brass Construction or something like that.
But they never recorded anything, did they?
No. They would just do dances and play for the fun of it, you know?
So what did you guys do after the group broke up? Did you stay in Chicago?
Well, we all kind of scattered, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Me and my other brother that played bass, he went in the Marine Corps. I went in the Navy. And Hank moved to Michigan. And
mm-hmm.
We lost contact with the Sutters there for a while. They all branched out, you know.
Yeah,
I
haven't been to Chicago in 20-something years.
I left Chicago in 74. I visited for a couple of weeks in 78, and that was the last time I've been to Chi-Town.
So where do you guys live now?
We're in southwest Louisiana in a small town called New Iberia.
Okay.
Close to Lafayette, about 200 miles from New Orleans.
And
right on the coast.
And then you guys, you said you still perform sometimes in the church? Or do you still ever perform?
No. I'll be sitting in my seat itching, though, wishing I could get up there and show them drummers how it's done, you know, but I just sit still, you know. We still have our equipment, some of our equipment, guitars and drums.
We still got equipment and all that.
I'm a grandpa now. I let my little grandson play on it.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully.
I'm an old man.
Yeah.
Well, at least you made all that music when you were younger. So
yeah,
that'll
always be there.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks so much for talking to me and telling your story. I'm sure the listeners appreciate hearing the story of your group too.
I sure appreciate appreciate what I've done. You know?
So do you have any last words for the audience?
Well, I just hope y'all continue to listen to our music. Maybe you can bring it back up and let a new artist redo it and something.
Yeah,
you know?
Something.
Bring it back to life.
We had some good lyrics and good songs.
The lyrics
just
still
probably wasn't quality, but still they had good intentions.
Oh, yeah. The lyrics can still be
for our age, you know? For our age.
Yeah, definitely you made
it. Sometimes myself, I didn't remember the lyrics, like singers and stuff.
Yeah.
And we learning brand new stuff. And I was still wondering to this day how they can remember that. And I think, when I hear some of this stuff, I about think about myself.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
at the time when we were recording, I wasn't a lyrics person. I was always the man bringing the beat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, now that I hear it and I listen to the words, man, we was talking about some pretty heavy stuff back then.
You're right.
Yeah,
that's what I think.
Yeah, definitely, like on that Time for a Change song.
Yeah, Time for a Change. That's somebody needs to get that.
You know?
Yeah.
It's time for a change.
War going on and all this. You know, somebody needs to get that and try to do something with that.
But I appreciate you letting us have this opportunity to let the people know we still kicking.
Yeah, thanks so much. So, thanks again. And this very last song that I'm going to play is your version of Find the One Who Loves You. Again, thanks again. And this last song is the 8 minutes with Find the One Who Loves You.
All right. Thank you.